Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and our next guest is the author of a fantastic novel called A Wish After Midnight that delves into the history of Brooklyn and the history of African Americans in Brooklyn, released just now to coincide with Black History Month. It seems we'll talk about the book and the challenges facing writers, creative writers of African descent and others today. Zeta Elliott, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So the main character in A Wish After Midnight is immediately recognizable as a contemporary city kid, a teenage girl of color who's dreaming of getting out of a cramped apartment off the block where her brother and sister are going nowhere fast. We don't see this girl too often in literature, though. Why did you want to get her on library shelves?
Absolutely for that reason. We don't have a lot of stories about Afro-Latina teenage girls living in Brooklyn who have aspirations to go to college. You know, Jenna is a young woman, like a lot of the girls that I have worked with here in New York City as an educator, and girls who have ambition. She wants to be a psychiatrist. She's planning to get a scholarship so she can go to one of the best colleges in the country. She's frustrated by the conditions in her community, but she doesn't necessarily want to leave. She wants to get off her block because the block, she feels, is limiting her. There are drug dealers in her building. And as you pointed out, she has older siblings who don't share her ambition. Her older brother isn't doing well in school, and he's dealing drugs. Her older sister is really quite content with the way things are. So Jenna is a voice that we don't get to hear very often, and it was important for me that her story be told.
But the story isn't all told in the present. Time travel is central to the plot.
Yes.
Why time travel?
Well, when I was a child, I grew up in Canada. I'm an immigrant. And I grew up reading a lot of British literature. So C.S. Lewis, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, that was an important story for me. I think that resonates with so many children, the idea that you could open a door and suddenly be in a different world.
So this is sort of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, but not set in the English countryside, rather set in Brooklyn, New York
City.
Well,
that was really my effort, was that after... By the time I got to college and started reading post-colonial literature, I realized that I had been invisible in all of those stories that I loved growing up. And I didn't want to completely abandon that literary legacy, but I did want to recognize that it had betrayed certain readers, including myself. So I do. I take particular motifs like the time slip novel, and I transpose them onto an urban landscape. It frustrates me that the city is so often figured as a dangerous and non-productive space for teenagers, and I think having the city be a space of magic, that was important to me.
I wonder if you were also influenced by Kindred, by Octavia Butler.
Absolutely.
another time travel book and, you know, involving African Americans. She says imaginary time travel is especially useful for Black kids because of the particular and peculiar history of the United States.
Absolutely. Octavia Butler's novel, Kindred, was really transformative and pivotal for me. And speculative fiction in particular, I think Kindred combines two genres, and that's speculative fiction and neo-slave narratives. And neo-slave narratives give us, you know, a second chance, a new way of looking at the conditions of the enslaved from a contemporary perspective. So I think there are some frustrations around teenagers, particularly in Black History Month, where they get hammered with the same stories about Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass, and then it jumps to Martin Luther King. So speculative fiction, a time travel novel, is a way of allowing contemporary teenagers to have an investment in the history where they get to participate. You know, a lot of teens think history is something that's over and done with and is something that was done to Black people, and that's not the case. We create history, and we create history through storytelling. So that was another reason that I wanted to have a time travel aspect to this book.
Zeta Elliott, my guest on WNYC, author of A Wish After Midnight. I don't know if anybody listening wants to call in and say anything about urban teens in literature or the absence thereof or time travel in literature and its uses. 212-433-WNYC. If you do want to talk to Zeta Elliott, 212-433-9696. 9792 or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And your book is a young adult novel, which means it's for teenagers, basically, right?
Generally. The young adult genre right now is very hot, and there's a lot of crossover appeal. So there are a lot
of grown-ups
adults.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What I've heard so far, I've actually heard from more adults than teenagers, that they really find the book meaningful.
And kind of a primer on Black life in Brooklyn during the Civil War era, sort of, right?
Definitely, definitely. I think I was surprised when I started doing research on Black history in Brooklyn. I was working with a group of teenage girls in Bed-Stuy, and we were mapping the community. So we would go around the neighborhood, finding out what resources there were, what facilities, and I asked them to look for the dates on buildings. And when you look at the cornerstones of some of the buildings, particularly mm-hmm. the Black churches, you know, there's history that goes back to the 1800s. And as an immigrant, I walk down the street, and that history just speaks to me immediately. But so many kids, you know, they live near Weeksville. Weeksville was a 19th century Black community, thriving community with its own newspapers, a home for the aged, a home for orphans. It was an amazing space, a sanctuary for Black people when Brooklyn was its own city. And it frustrates me that more children don't know about that. And that they can still visit Weeksville today. The Weeksville Heritage Center is an incredible opportunity to learn about that past.
And we had the director of the center on our show just a few months ago.
Great.
So Weeksville is definitely a too little known resource.
It really is.
In New York City and Brooklyn. So during African American History Month, students learn about Harriet Tubman and the Underground Railroad and mm-hmm. about things pertaining to slavery. But you wanted to write a book that looks at slavery differently.
I did, particularly since a lot of the focus, my research as a scholar is on depictions of racial violence in African-American literature, and there's an automatic assumption that when you say racial violence, you're talking about the South. You're talking about lynching and race riots that happened elsewhere. But, you know, racial violence was a problem here in the North. It was a problem in New York City, not only during the Civil War and the New York City draft riots, but when tensions arise and communities are competing for scarce resources, there's a potential for conflict. And I wanted students to understand that history doesn't have to be traumatic. It doesn't have to figure them as humiliated or degraded or brutalized, that they can actually find a triumphant strain in those narratives if they reframe the way they're looking at the past.
Well, we'll see if the book becomes popular. I can tell you your radio appearance is becoming popular because our phones are lighting up.
Oh, really?
So let's talk to Laree in Bedford-Stuyvesant. Laree, thanks for calling.
Hi, yes, thanks for taking the call. I love the show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say that your work is awesome, and people often say that these kids, and by these kids they often mean urban children, don't want to learn, and they do, just not what they're
yes.
learning in school because
yes.
the material isn't culturally competent. If you don't see yourself in the literature, if you don't see your story being told in a way that leaves you feeling positive about you and your people, you're not going to embrace reading.
Absolutely.
You're not going to develop a passion for that. It's only when you use culturally competent materials like this book, like literature that pertains to the lives and the realities that these kids experience, that you'll be able to develop a passion, not just for reading, but for research and for academia
yes.
in general.
Curiosity, that's exactly what we're trying to stimulate, right, is to get kids to go beyond not just that one book, but then they get hungry and they look for more.
Jenna, thank you. Abdullah in Babylon, you're on WNYC. Hi, Abdullah.
Hello, thank you. I think the lady is right. There's an absolute war against this whole subject, and I'm happy to hear to know about the author's efforts. The previous caller was saying this whole false stereotype of urban children, Black and Latin, not wanting to learn. There's nothing for them. They're intelligent to know to look around and see when there's nothing for them. And this whole, the worst thing that the people in the media perpetrate, this thing about calling the children who were eager to fit into a certain system, that they say that the kids accuse them of being white or it's white to want to learn. That just galls me. I wish they would get real about that. These systems have nothing for them. The most brilliant children are the ones who are turned off by it. I was in the library at Grand Army Plaza, and I was checking all through February. It's a shame that Black History is only in February, but mm-hmm. it's better than nothing. And if they would just tell the truth when they tell history, you wouldn't need a 1 month for it. I inquired about a display of Black books, Black authors, or subjects, and they said, "Oh, we don't do Black History Month. You know, we don't believe it's necessary like that kind of post-racial
to separate
thing that's being talked."
Abdullah, thank you for your call. Anything there you want to react to? He, you know, he says the smartest. I mean, do you go all the way where he goes? You know, the smartest kids are the ones who are the most turned off from school, anything like that?
Well, I think we have to recognize that children learn differently. And when you have a one-size-fits-all model, you do have kids who tune out, who get turned off. But there are also kids who are struggling and who have challenges. So, I mean, I have to say, both of my parents were public school teachers, and I'm an educator. I've been a professor, and I've worked with kids. So I know that there are a lot of challenges in the public school system right now, and I want to make sure that we support our teachers and encourage them and give them the resources and the opportunity to be creative, because a lot of teachers want to reach out and add new resources, new texts, and they're not exactly being given that opportunity.
Let me get one more call in for you. It's Stacy in Stratford. You're on WNYC. Hi, Stacy.
Hi, how are you? Good morning. I just wanted to say kudos to the author for bringing this type of character into literature that we really don't see a lot of, and also adding that fantasy element. Myself being mulatto, my mother is African American and my father is white. I've also noticed that there is a definite lack of mulattoes in literature. You know, there's struggles, and I would even love to see more of that, or even something where, you know, you have sort of like a fantasy or a science fiction component.
Mm-hmm. But and Stacey, I'm gonna leave it there. You made your point. You made your character mixed race for a reason.
She's racially black, culturally. She's bicultural, I guess I would say. But it was important to me to have a range of voices. So Jenna's boyfriend is a Jamaican immigrant. He's Rastafarian. I don't think that's a voice we hear often enough in young adult literature. There is a mixed-race character, Paul Easterly, that we meet in the 19th century, and he's struggling with what it means to be a mixed-race person who presents as white.
And I think you were cringing at the word she used for mixed race. Probably a lot of listeners were, too. Is that word, should that word be dead and gone, in your
opinion?
Well,
that word certainly comes from the 19th century. I think, you know, mixed race, I am mixed race, so I think mixed race people certainly have the right to self-identify however they like. We tend to use the term biracial or interracial or mixed race now. But, you know, I come from a family that has a long history of interracial mixing. My mother technically is an octoroon, and my grandmother is a quadroon, but we don't use those terms
anymore.
We don't know.
We have 30 seconds left, just 30 seconds. Self-publishing. You were told by editors this is a great book, but we just don't see a market for it.
Yes, and so authors need to know that they have other options. When those doors close, find a window, and self-publishing is that window. A lot of people don't know that less than 2% of the 5,000 books published each year for kids are written by black people.
How can people find your book?
They can go to my website, ZettaElliott.com, and they can go online, IndieBound, Amazon.com, and in libraries and all bookstores.
And it is called A Wish After Midnight, author Zetta Elliott. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.